Okay, so I'm glad we got the memo that the Shear is gonna be tonight. I guess you figured that out, hence you're here. I had a wedding to go to last night, so I just pushed it off. I wanted to ask, just get a general sense right now. The clocks are about to change, and I assume everyone's, has a lot of time in general. Actually, that's a bad assumption, but is 8 o'clock late?
Yeah, Toby's
Or
loaded with it.
do people want to do earlier, or do people want to keep it at 8 o'clock? We want to
They
keep it at 8, not 7:30 or anything like that.
I'd prefer 7:30, 7 or 7:30.
Anyone else? Just to, I'd get a general sense.
I would say 8, but I'm an irregular.
Okay.
No, I will also say 8. This is, sometimes you work
Seven.
late, sometimes
It
different
depends on the
things.
day.
Depends on a day. Okay. It doesn't sound like anyone, it sounds
I'm going to
like,
have to
there's
catch it
not
on
a
reruns
strong,
for a couple weeks,
there's not a strong opinion going one way or the other, so I guess we'll leave it.
I would like it earlier.
Earlier. Okay. So we'll figure out a good way to do a vote on this. But it doesn't sound like we have an overwhelming majority of any kind to change it. But okay, I'll figure out a better way to take a vote in the future, but I just wanted to get a sense. Anyway,
But you're
let's
going to
try.
keep it at Monday nights, right?
We're keeping
Yeah,
Monday night.
that's okay.
That's not,
Okay.
this is just a one-time change just
Right.
because
Okay.
of a life
Yes.
cycle event. That was all.
Right. No problem.
Okay, great. So let's start. Let me just so this week I want to do something a little bit different. One of the things I love learning is halacha on the parsha. Some of you might already have a sense of that. So we're in Bereishis right now. We're in the book of Genesis, and that's a lot of people, that's their favorite book because it has all of the narratives, all of the stories in it. But what I like to do is actually look at the halacha that could be gleaned from the stories, because these stories, they're not just here for entertainment value. I mean, honestly, I mean the stories are great, but I mean I wouldn't exact I mean I guess I did watch there was a History Channel Bible series, which was really awesome that I watched. There were 5 episodes from Tanakh, and there were 5 episodes from New Testament. So now I actually know some of the storyline in the New Testament based on that. But you're not gonna read these stories just for the fun of it, I think. I mean, there's like other novels out there you could read. Also, if you study ancient Near Eastern theology and mythology in general, there's a lot of crazier stuff like battles of the gods going on that you could read about. But the point of stories in Tanakh is to teach us lessons, ethical lessons. And generally, ethical lessons also have what to do with halacha. So let me ask you a question before I show you where the halacha comes from. This is going to be our ethical halakhic issue we're going to deal with. Abstract. I'll give an example in a moment. Abstract question. I have to do one of two things. Either I have to commit one large sin, a sin that will result in a death penalty for me. So that means if I get a death penalty for committing a certain sin, that means it's pretty bad. Or I can do a few smaller sins. A few, they don't have any associated punishments with them, such as a death penalty, but they are averos. They are prohibited by the Torah. So if I give you a choice, you had to do one or the other. A one-time big whammy, a huge sin that results in death penalty. It's really bad. Or numerous smaller sins. What would you think? Just without going into the sources yet, what would your impression be? What would be the lesser of the two evils?
What's the penalty for the smaller sins?
What was that?
Yeah.
You gave the
So no,
penalty.
right. So the penalty is there's no written penalty in the Torah. It's just right. So like in our Shaar HaGemul class, when God is weighing the scales, he just takes, he deducts points, or however you want to think of the cheshbon. But it's not really the punishment per se. It just happens to be, it's a siman, it's an indicator. When a sin has a higher level, has a punishment associated with it, it means that if you get capital punishment, it's there to tell you that this is a more severe sin, right? So, idolatry is up there, breaking Shabbos is up there. So let me, I'll give us a more concrete example of that in a moment, but do we have any idea of what would be better, what would be worse? A few smaller sins or one really big sin? Yeah, Toby? take a stab at it?
I don't know better or worse, but my personal preference would be for the smaller ones. Yeah. I'd have more opportunities to do tshuva.
Tshuva, right, right.
So, yeah. To the extent that there's a benefit in doing tshuva, I guess
also,
talk to Toby about that point. So that's interesting you bring up tshuva. I know that that's always a factor you like to remind us about. I'm getting a theme here. So teshuva is very important. I should do well to remember that as well. Though I would actually say teshuva was the important factor. I would say, if I do a one-time terrible sin, I could say, you know what? I was caught up in that moment. That's not really who I am. But if I do multiple smaller sins, at a certain point, I have to almost be conscious that I'm doing that. So I know from a teshuva perspective, I would think the opposite almost. But okay, but it's a good thing you're raising that factor. Susan, you had something to say, right?
Yeah, no, I would think smaller ones because the impact of any one of them wouldn't be as bad.
Right. The question is, right, exactly. So that's the question do they add up eventually? How does that work?
Yeah, but you're not injuring somebody or whatever the sin might be. It wouldn't be as detrimental to somebody else.
Okay.
Well, it depends. I mean, you could be talking about, let's say, a Shabbos violation that it's Kares Misa, but it doesn't affect anybody else at all.
Very good.
Well, I was thinking if it did, and not necessarily that way.
Right, so you're bringing up a sin that's being adam lamakum between me and God versus being adam lachavero between me and someone else. Would that be a distinction? So good, that's another factor to consider. Let me show you where it comes up. Where this question comes
from? How about are these small sins? Are they repetitive of the same sin?
Yeah.
Or they're different sins?
For argument's sake, it's the same sin.
Same sin all the time?
All the time, every time.
In other words, you do tshuva, and then you forget it, and you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again.
No, we're talking about where you did those three, and you pretty well know what you're doing, didn't have any tshuva in between. So that's really what we're talking about here. But I like all these different factors that you're raising, how they could all play a role. So let's take it from my abstract question and try to give a little more flavor to what we're talking about here. This might address some of your questions. But before I give a little more flavor to the ethical question, let me show you where it comes up. So in our parsha this week in Lech Lecha, Avraham and Sarah, there's a famine and they have to go down to Egypt to get supplies. The thing is, when they get to Egypt, what happens? Avraham instructs Sarah to pretend that she is his sister. He says to his wife, I just noticed that you are a beautiful woman. By the way, Chazal say that means that he never really looked at his wife until this point. Yeah. Only at this point in his life did he realize that. So
very good.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to say it. I mean, I guess it's a level of piety. I don't know, because you're actually supposed to, it's a separate halacha, b'hafta recha kamocha, you're supposed to know what your wife looks like before you marry her. So I don't know how that worked out. But anyway, that's not our topic for tonight. V'haya ki yiru itcha hamitzrim v'amru ishto zos v'hargu osi b'itcha yichya. So what's going to happen? They're going to let you live and they're going to kill me because they're going to want you. So rather, imrina achosiat, lamani tavli bavurev, b'chaisanavshi b'lalech. So rather, say that you are my sister. That way, I'll be treated well. You'll be kept alive also, albeit maybe not treated the way you were intending. And that way, we survive. So here's the question. This is like a weird scenario. They were willing. So here's how the Mitzrim are thinking. Here's how the Egyptians are thinking. She's a married woman. So no one can marry her. Pharaoh can't marry her. He can't take her. because that would be adultery to take another man's wife. So what's the solution? Well, we don't want to violate the sin of adultery. So I guess if we murder the husband, then we won't commit a sin of adultery. What's wrong with that? Why is it that the sin of adultery, whoa, that's really crazy. Murder, oh, murder, that's okay, that's fine. We read this parsha all the time, and we just kind of take the story at face value, but you ever wonder, what's like the moral calculus being made over here? You know, we're willing to murder.
They're worried that,
what?
Because if Abraham is still alive, he might kill them. Or the Pharaoh or whatever, if he's around when adultery happens.
Right. So, practically, it makes no sense to leave the husband alive. It's the same way, you know, when a king takes over, he kills the family members of the person he deposed. But from a moral standpoint, it sounds like it was a moral issue that they did not want him. Right. Practically, it makes sense that they would want to kill him. You're right. But it sounds like it's more than that. The Mepharshim explain that it's a moral issue as well. Definitely, Toby, you can answer and say, yeah, practically, we can't leave the husband alive. Maybe that was it. But it sounds like that we're led to assume that there is a moral issue as well. So the question is, wait a minute. If adultery is bad, why isn't murder bad? And if murder is okay, why did they draw the line when it comes to adultery? It's almost comical when you think about it, right? But certainly, Toby, your point's well taken that on a pragmatic level, they also would want to get rid of Abraham. Otherwise, he would seek revenge. So this question, my same rule for some of my other classes, almost all the material that is quoted in this piece does not have a translation available. So again, you're welcome to just look at my screen, listen to my voice or whatever you want. If you want to follow along in the Hebrew, you're welcome to as well, and I'll translate the relevant passages. So Rav Yonason Eipschitz, Rav Yonason Eipschitz asks as follows. He asks this question. That's everything up until where the cursor is right now. And he answers based on Tosas as follows. You ever hear the term, Christians use this more than Jews do, of living in sin? Mm-hmm. Usually refers to a man and woman who aren't married but are living together. So Christians use the term, they are living together in sin. So there is that kind of idea also when it comes to Judaism as well, that there's a difference between a one-time sin versus living in sin. Tosa says as follows, there tzichas Avraham maisa iser echadu. Killing Avraham, that was a one-time issue. All right, look, you know, one time, you know, we'll kill him, we'll throw him into the Hudson River, and no one will ever ask about it, and that'll be it. That'll be done one time, chick-chock, done. The Isser Ishes Ish, but the prohibition of having adultery, Avshe Suru Kal Yoser, even though when you're stacking things, perhaps having a woman who's an Ishes Ish, may not be as bad as straight up murder. Okay, we could try to make that cheshbon, but even if you say that, Nikol Makom Isuro B'chol B'yobia, each and every time Paro would be intimate with Sarah, that would be another Isser. That would be another violation, another prohibition. So what the Egyptians were doing is they were addressing our question. Remember, our question was, if I have to do one terrible sin, one really terrible sin, or multiple smaller ones, smaller in terms of relatively speaking. So the Egyptians said, well, I think it makes more sense to do a one-time big Isser rather than doing multiple smaller Isserim. And what's interesting, what comes out from Tosos is that there's kind of like a Dvar Torah to be made here almost, that there's a difference between someone who makes a one-time mistake, it could be a really big mistake, but it doesn't necessarily define who they are, versus if someone decides to live constantly every single day committing that sin over and over and over again, it's hard to say, yeah, you know, just like a one-time thing that they did. If every day they're doing it, at a certain point, it defines the way somebody lives. And so that's what the, I'm not saying the Egyptians, you know, had their Gemaras open or Chaims and were, you know, moving their thumbs back and forth, but that was the moral calculus that was at play with the Egyptians. And so what the Egyptians were thinking is actually a much broader halachic topic. The real question, this comes up in halacha, is if on Shabbos there is somebody who is sick, and don't ask me why, but the remedy to heal him is to feed him meat. Well, okay, great. So, you know, just take out some meat, put it on the hot plate, and wait for it to warm up, and okay, great. Shabbos lunch, you get meat, you're gonna be all well. The issue is you only have two options. There's no kosher meat readily available. So you could do one of two things. You could either slaughter a cow on Shabbos and then provide the meat to him. Or number two, you do have some prepared meat, but it's nevela. It is. It wasn't shechted properly. It was torn up already. Whatever it is, but it's not kosher meat. So on the one hand, slaughtering on Shabbos, shechita on Shabbos, that you get death penalty for it. That's violating Shabbos. Or number two, there is feeding him pieces of nevela. The issue is every time he eats that non-kosher meat, each and every time, that's technically another violation. Now, okay, we know,
but if this be quach nefesh
purposes to save someone's life on Shabbos, you're allowed to violate Shabbos to do that. But the question is, when I have two options for violating Shabbos, I could do one major, I mean, not Shabbos, but I could do one, sorry, let me back up. I did not phrase this correctly. To save someone's life in general in the Torah, not just Shabbos, in general, we could break almost any mitzvah, any aveira in the Torah to save someone's life. So the question is it better to directly violate Shabbos and slaughter that animal, which if I weren't doing it to save someone's life, it would result in a death penalty. So this is like a serious issur here. Or number two, feed him small pieces of nevela, small pieces of meat, and that's not kosher. So there's no big issue over here. You don't get death penalty for eating non-kosher meat, but each and every time he eats the meat, that's another violation. So
yeah, but Rabbi, forgive me, but you've changed the calculus because it's not the same person who's violating.
Very good. You're out. So you're already jumping in.
Violating. Okay.
I mean, no, that's good. It's good. No. Sorry, you know, I shouldn't jump.
No. But the person who's eating it is now the violator, from what you're saying, when he eats each of the pieces of the nevela. So is it better to do the sin yourself or to cause somebody else to be sinning?
Very good. So
because when you check the animal, it's now a kosher animal. So the person who's eating it is not violating anything. He didn't check it, so he's not responsible for that. And he's eating kosher meat, so he's okay there. It's you're changing the calculus when you make it when you're giving
two people, two different people.
I love it. So you know, Toby, this is exactly you're mechaving to the Radvaz. The Radvaz, this is actually you can see I put a little gimbal over here in my own.
I don't even
pencil.
Know who he is, but okay.
Radvaz is very important chuvos that he wrote. He gets quoted pretty widely, so you're in good company. That's what I could say. The Radvaz actually notes that distinction that you're bringing up, Toby, which is really the third answer I was going to give, but you know what? Since you brought it up, let's go straight to it. So the Radvaz says, Ki ein dichoy Shabbos mutu ahachola ella al kol Yisrael omdom lav. When we have to break Shabbos to save someone's life, who is it incumbent upon? So it's not incumbent upon the person who is sick to break, to violate a prohibition to save his life, because he's the subject over here. He is incapacitated. or almost incapacitated. He's bedridden. There's not much that he could actually do on his own. Rather, who is it incumbent upon to save this person's life? It's incumbent upon the other party, the people, the Good Samaritans, like Toby pointed out. Ah, so here the calculus changes. Therefore, we don't tell someone to sin in order so that their friend can avoid a sin. Meaning, who's violating the prohibition when they eat non-kosher meat? The person who's sick. Who is violating the shechita? Who's violating Shabbos? The people who are trying to save him. Ah, so these people, they're not allowed to go in and say, you know what, let's make a cheshbon, which takes into account this other person. No, they're supposed to take into account their own sins. They're not allowed to sin in order to help out their friend. So, Toby, I want to bring out this piece even stronger. There's a little bit of a prelude that builds up to it, but I just want to show that this distinction already comes up in the Radvaz. But we'll come back to, God willing, momentarily. I just want to show the first two approaches that lead up to it. Okay. So approach number one, we'll come back to the Radvaz. If we didn't catch it, we'll catch it in a moment. The Radvaz says as follows. Sorry, not the Radvaz. The Ran. The Ran in Yoma says as follows. So the halacha, he says, is that in fact, most poskim say that we're supposed to slaughter the animal on Shabbos rather than feed the non-kosher meat. So wait, why is it? Why do we choose to slaughter one time instead of feeding smaller isurim? So his answer is, this basically speaks to the idea that we just saw when it comes to Paro and it came to killing Avraham. So the Ran believes that it is prohibited to feed this person the nevela, rather you're supposed to do just a one-time iser, regardless of the severity of it. And Rav Yonasan Eifetz, just to address the parsha question before we delve more into the Hilchos Shabbos and Kashrus issues, is that is what the Egyptians were thinking. The Egyptians basically, they were looking in the Rishonim. They said, oh, what do you know? There's a Ran in Maseches Yoma who addressed this issue, right? So you almost imagine the Egyptians, like, they had their whole shots and poskim in front of them, and they were thinking it through when they were figuring out, are we going to kill Avraham or not? I mean, really, they wouldn't murder him if they actually followed halacha, but whatever. So this accords with the Ran. Now, I don't think the Ran actually proves it from the story in Lech Lecha, but Rav Yonasan Eifetz, he makes the connection. He says, therefore, that's why they were willing to do a one-time kill Avraham, one-time murder, rather than have Paro live with Sarah in sin. That's the position of the Ran. However, approach number two to this is as follows. The Rush and the Or Zeruah and many others, they agree. They agree that you're supposed to slaughter an animal on Shabbos rather than feed this person multiple smaller violations of eating non-kosher meat. The issue is that the reason they say that is not because doing a one-time big iser is inherently a better option than multiple smaller isurim, but the reasoning is specifically because of nevela, specifically because we're talking about non-kosher meat over here. In general, the halakha would actually be that's better to feed, to do multiple smaller isurim rather than one big whammy. Okay, wait. So if so, why is it that the Russian others advise that even still you should do that one big iser, even though that's not the better option, because as follows. Because shim yishma hachola shichatichas baser nevela yakutz daito ba vlo yirtzel ochlo. What's going to happen? If this person who is sick hears that he's being fed non-kosher meat, he's not going to want to accept it. You know, it's almost, he's basically like that, like the person who refuses to he refuses to eat on Yom Kippur, even though he has to eat on Yom Kippur for his health. It's going to be a situation like that, where if he finds out he's being fed nevela, he's going to say, I've never eaten non-kosher meat. Non-kosher meat is disgusting. It's repugnant. It's abhorrent. I'm never going to eat it. So therefore, practically, we need to do shechita. We need to do the one-time big iser, because it's not viable practically, because of just a technicality of how some human beings work. There's a good chance they're not going to eat the nevela if they find out that it's nevela, that's not kosher meat. And the Or Zerua adds on to it. It's not even just about subjectively how I feel. He says, "Dachilas machos asurus havi genai gadol," because eating non-kosher meat is a huge genai, it's a huge disgrace. What does that mean? So there's this idea, he doesn't really flesh it out here, but the sugya in Gittin that gets referenced is that there's something called timtum halev. Timtum halev means that, so again, for those who come to our Thursday morning class, we talk about reward and punishment a bit. There's two kinds of punishments, I suppose you could say. There's one which we, I think, more typically think of, which is, okay, I violated a miscellaneous prohibition of the Torah. God records that I did that bad thing, and then God decides to punish me accordingly. That's, I would venture to say, how most of us think of reward and punishment. But there's also naturalistic punishment, which is not really a punishment. It's just, if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. What does that mean? It means is that, and this is what we learned about kosher food, how many of the non-kosher animals we don't eat, it's because they personify these negative character traits, these negative mitos. So when I eat non-kosher food, it could be because I'm trying to save my life. It could be that I didn't know I was eating non-kosher food. It doesn't matter. It will still somehow metaphysically have a negative impact on myself once I eat that non-kosher food. So what happens is, even though this person is, he needs to save his life, the thing is, if he eats food that was slaughtered on Shabbos through a violation of Shabbos, he was allowed to do it to save his life. Nothing changes about him. But if he eats a non-kosher food, even though he's doing it to save his life, it doesn't matter. Since just intrinsically, non-kosher food mystically has this bad impact on people, therefore, we don't want to feed him the small pieces of the vela. Therefore, we don't want to give him the smaller, multiple smaller prohibitions. Rather, we give him the big one. But if this was a case that had nothing to do with non-kosher food, if you just inserted anything else that wasn't that, the Rush would tell you that it's better to do multiple smaller isurim rather than one big one, which is the opposite of what the Ron said, and it's the opposite of what it looks like the Egyptians held as well. So there's this huge machlokis over here about that, okay? Just I'll just pause if there's one or two questions, but just we'll keep it very brief because we're already after 8:30. Anything I could clarify at this point? Okay, great. So the third answer is really based, well, it's essentially what Toby was getting at. So the Ravaz says, let's just go back to it for a moment. So Toby's point was as follows. Toby said that, right, you'll correct me if I get this wrong, is that this isn't such a simple calculation, because when there's non-kosher food at stake, who's violating it? The person who is sick, he's eating the non-kosher food. But if they opt to break Shabbos, who's slaughtering the animal? The people are trying to save him. So you have two different people doing that violation. So since who is it incumbent upon to break a mitzvah or break a sin to save his life? The good Samaritans. So it makes sense for the good Samaritans. They should go ahead and they should do the shechita. They should slaughter the animal on Shabbos. Why? Because if they give him the non-kosher food, if they give him the nevela, they're basically trying to save themselves from violating Shabbos. But wait, you're not allowed to say, we don't tell someone that you should sin to save someone else. So what they're doing by giving this person non-kosher food is they're saying, yeah, we didn't really want to break Shabbos for you, so here's some non-kosher food so you could be the guy who breaks the Torah. The thing is, though, who's the mitzvah incumbent upon to save their friend's life? It's on the Good Samaritans who see that he is suffering and they want to help him. Therefore, it shouldn't be the sick person who eats the non-kosher food. Rather, who should do the violation? The people are trying to save him. Therefore, forget about big prohibition, small prohibition. It's about who is doing the prohibition, who is charged with the imperative to even break a mitzvah or break a sin in order to save someone's life. It's the Good Samaritans. Therefore, they slaughter the meat on Shabbos rather than give the non-kosher food, to give the nevela to this person, because it's their mitzvah. It's their mitzvah to save his life. That's what the Ravah says. And does that speak to your point, Toby?
Totally, yes.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you brought that up. So that was the Ravaz / Toby Shita there. There we go. One last idea that I want to bring up, and this really opens up a whole can of worms, which, by the way, this next thing that we're dealing with, I think I spent just a few weeks in my capstone halacha courses in Smicha at YU dealing with this general topic. So it's a big topic. We're only going to touch the surface of it right now as it pertains to our question. So I want to introduce two terms which are really important to know in halacha if we haven't heard them yet. Has anyone ever heard of hutra versus dechuya? Do those terms mean anything at all? Okay. So, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's like, if there's one thing you come out of this class knowing, it's this, but actually, if there's one thing we know, because this comes up in so many different halachic topics, it's good to remember. Hutra, so here's what, let me highlight the word over here. Hutra, my highlighting's not working because I'm not in Adobe Acrobat, but you can see my cursor pointing at it, right? Mm-hmm. So hutra is the same root as heter. When I get a heter, when I get permission to do something, versus dechuya, you ever hear like Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos, but we don't do Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. It gets pushed off to Sunday. Okay. It's called a?
Doche.
Right, doche. It's a nidche. Same word, same root, exactly. So it's the same root, gets pushed off. So here's the question. This is a classic chakira, a classic dichotomy, a very brisker way of thinking about when I break Shabbos. When I have to save someone's life on Shabbos, am I violating Shabbos to save someone's life? Or, so that would be dechuya, I'm breaking Shabbos, but saving someone's life supersedes Shabbos. So I'm breaking it, I'm violating it, I'm doing a full violation, a full aver. I'm not happy about having to break Shabbos, but I got to do it anyway. That would be dechuya, where it's pushed off for a higher consideration of saving someone's life. Hutra is, here in the words, the Shabbos hutra eitzel bikuach nefesh, v'harei zeh ki yom chol. When it comes to saving someone's life, it's not that I'm breaking Shabbos to save someone's life. It's that as far as it pertains to this person right now, it is considered as if it is Monday morning right now. It's Tuesday. It's not Shabbos right now for this person. Therefore, when I slaughter this animal, I'm not breaking Shabbos to save this person's life. I'm just slaughtering on a typical weekday. That's hutra. It's completely mutter. And as by the way, I'm just halach lamaisa. There's like all these questions that practical halachic questions that are based on it, such as ancillary care. So if someone needs to get stitches on Shabbos because they have a cut, or is the doctor allowed to do additional things for aesthetic purposes above just saving the person's life? We passing that you can, but if I say you can only break Shabbos so much to save someone's life, you can't do additional ancillary care measures. When we talk about, let's say you know that you're about to have a baby, you know that you're due over Shabbos. Should you book a hotel room? If there's a hotel right next to the hospital, should you book a hotel room right next to the hospital so you don't need to go into a car on Shabbos? So if I would say Shabbos is dechuya, that Shabbos is just being pushed off, but you should try to avoid bringing Shabbos wherever you can, then you should get that hotel room. So as you can imagine, we hold that you don't have to get the hotel room, but that's for additional considerations as well. So this is not just an academic question. This chakira, this question of...
Yeah, well, I mean, what about the doctors working on Shabbos?
What about, who is?
Like, what about the doctors getting called in to go to the hospital on Shabbos for an emergency? Is this what they rely on, the Orthodox doctors, this terminology?
What they rely on is essentially Rav Moshe's tshuva saying that you should treat not... Oh, no, you're saying in terms of the chuya. I mean, the idea is that you also have to be able to live your life normally as well. I think that's one of the considerations that comes in. So you're also expected to be keeping Shabbos, and since you won't be able to keep Shabbos if you're constantly staying at that hotel room, the same way you would be if you were at home attending good old Aguda Shalom, that's one of the considerations that's taken into account. So that's why many poskim, even though I think it was the Ramah who went with the Dechuya route, we still say you don't have to spend your whole Shabbos, every Shabbos in a hotel room right by the hospital. There's another topic we'll do eventually, which is saving a non-Jewish life on Shabbos, and that whole debate that came up, Rav Moshe had a tshuva talking about that. As you can imagine, we do break Shabbos, save non-Jewish people's lives, but the debate leading up to that decision is fascinating. Anyway, why do I bring this all up? So here's the deal. Reuven needs to save Shimon's life. And Shimon, so here's the thing. I can do one of two things. I can either slaughter an animal and break Shabbos, or I can give him non-kosher food. Here's the thing, though. It's not really a choice between one sin versus the other. Because when I slaughter that animal on Shabbos to save that person's life, I'm not violating Shabbos. I'm not breaking Shabbos for a higher cause of saving someone's life. Right now, it's not even Shabbos. I'm not violating anything. It's hutra. It's not dechuya. It's hutra. It's completely mutter. So, of course, I give him then the non-kosher foods, the opposite of what the Ram would say. We do give him the slaughtered meat. We do not give him the non-kosher meat, because the non-kosher meat is still breaking non-kosher. It's breaking kashrus in order to save someone's life. But when I slaughter that animal on Shabbos, I'm not even violating any isurim. I'm not committing any sins. In fact, actually, let me, I don't think he explicates it over here, but as we know, in general, here's the thing. So why is it that I break Shabbos in order to save someone's life on Shabbos? Anyone know what the Gemara tells me? What's the reason that I could break one Shabbos, that I could break Shabbos to save someone's life? So the idea is, that if I save someone's life this Shabbos, they'll be able to keep many more Shabbosim in their life, right? I'm sure some of us have heard of that idea. Here's the thing, though. Why did the Gemara need to give me that reason? I'm allowed to break almost anything in the Torah to save somebody's life. So why do you need to give me a special reason when it comes to Shabbos? Break one Shabbos so you can keep many Shabbos in the future. Shkoyach, I could break anything in the Torah in order to save someone's life. Why do you need to give me a special reason for Shabbos? Ah, so the answer is as follows. Because whenever I break any Isser in the Torah to save someone's life, that is Dechuya. I'm breaking a prohibition which is superseded by the need to save someone's life. That's the priority. I'm still breaking kashrus. I'm still violating whatever that Avera is. But Shabbos, when it comes to Shabbos, this is actually a step further than I said before. Forget about it being like a weekday. It's Shabbos right now. But when you break Shabbos to save someone's life, you're not breaking Shabbos. In fact, it's actually a kiyum. It's a fulfillment of Shabbos itself. You are keeping Shabbos because by saving this person's life, they are able to fulfill many Shabbosos in the future. So we're taught that there's a special din, a special svara, a special idea when it comes to Shabbos that is not dechuya. You're not breaking Shabbos, but you're actually, it's a kiyum. You are fulfilling Shabbos. Therefore, that's why the Chasam Sofer, and that's why, the Maharal Rutenberg say that you do not give him the non-kosher meat, not because of this whole big isser versus small isser. It's because small prohibitions versus no prohibition. Because when I break Shabbos to save someone's life, I'm not breaking Shabbos. I'm actually fulfilling and upholding the day of Shabbos. That's what he says. So, briefly, if there are any questions or anything I could, summarize or clarify, I'll just briefly go through because we had four approaches. So let me just quickly summarize if there are any questions and then we'll conclude. So we had a question, right? Is it better to do one big prohibition or multiple smaller prohibitions? We talked about how in Paro's case, they wanted to do a one-time kill Avraham, so Paro wouldn't have to commit multiple isur, multiple violations of being intimate with Sarah, which she's a married woman. So then that brought us into the question of, is it better to slaughter meat on Shabbos for someone who's sick?
Rabbi?
Or is it better to give him non-kosher meat, which is a lesser degree of prohibition, but he does it multiple times? So we have the position of the Ran. The Ran says it's better to do one big isser than multiple small ones, just like we saw by the Egyptians. The Rush says it's true, you do give him the meat, the slaughtered meat rather than non-kosher meat, but that's only because non-kosher meat has a negative effect on somebody. But really, the etzem, if that wasn't a factor, it's better actually to do multiple smaller isurim than one big one. And then we have the Ravaz who says, okay, maybe that's true and all, but the thing is, when it comes to this case here, which Toby brought up, we're mixing apples and oranges, because when we feed the person who's sick non-kosher meat, why does he have to eat the non-kosher meat? The mitzvah is on the people saving his life. Therefore, they should be the ones to break Shabbos by slaughtering the animal. And then Rami Rutenberg says, this is not even a real question, because when it comes to giving non-kosher meat to the person, that's actually violating kashrus. However, when you slaughter the meat on Shabbos, you're not breaking Shabbos, you're upholding Shabbos. So therefore, since there's not actually a violation, a sin being done here, it's not that it's being superseded, but you're fulfilling Shabbos, therefore you give him the piece of meat that is slaughtered rather than multiple of those smaller nevela issues. That's what Rami Rutenberg says. So there's the summary. And does anyone, I know there's a lot to process over there. Does anyone have any questions, anything that I could help clarify at this point?
Yeah. Well, why would Paro have been concerned with sins when, it's not part of the same belief system?
Right. So I think it's a good question. I think the piece is a little bit anachronistic, if I'm being honest. Mm. Truth be told, I don't think Paro really did care.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the same belief system as us. So this is kind of like just a genre that I took a liking to, which essentially takes issues that come up in the Torah and say, huh, what if we plugged in the halakhic system? How would the halakhic system want us to address a case like this? But Susie, your point's well taken. I don't think Power was sitting there with his shocks and poskim and harving over the sugya, going through, oh, the Marami Rimri is this, but the Ravas is that. Like, that wasn't happening. I mean, it's a question if even, you know, the Jewish people back then were doing that, but definitely not Paro. So, yes. Okay. Great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm bothered by the same thing Susan is. I mean, these are such important concepts. Why would all these commentators have gone back to non-Jews?
Well, it was really just Rav Yonason Eibshitz who made the connection. The rest of what we saw, they don't make that connection to Paro. So
okay.
The connection's made by by an Acharon, Rav Yonason Eibshitz. But that was kind of like our springboard for the broader question. I thought, you know, it's a good sugya, and I thought, you know, hey, look, there's a nice connection to the Parsha there as well. Think of the connection to the Parsha as the bonus. If you don't buy the connection, that's totally okay as well. I think it's an interesting halakhic topic nonetheless.
Also, Rabbi, I think yes, we have to remember this, the Paro that they're talking about here is not the same Paro that enslaved.
We know that.
I just wanted to be sure.
Right. Okay, so that's good for us. Right. Definitely we need to be aware also of the chronology.
You might have had some sense of morals.
I mean, a little, even so, that doesn't mean he shared our beliefs.
They probably weren't
from our police system.
Well, they were bound by Sheva b'nei Noach.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, so right. That's a good point, right? So they still wouldn't be allowed to commit adultery. They wouldn't be allowed to murder. Oh, so you're right.
Adultery part of
b'nei Noach. Like the sexual prohibition. So, I mean, Arayos, I think, is more broader. So the parameters for Goyim have to be examined, but adultery would be included in there, I believe. All right. Wonderful. Yasher Kol,
thank you
everyone.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was really good. Thank you.
All right. Looking forward to learning
Thank
next
you,
time.
Rabban.
Thank you, Rabban. Thank you.